My name's Ruth and I'm an addict. This is a lot, isn't it? Can you rescue me, Shelley?
Yes.
I don't have to hold it.
The lead's caught in the table. Does anyone have to do it?
No. It's okay.
All right, then. I'm going to let go of it then.
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Ruth. I'm an addict.
Hi, Ruth.
Hi. And I was thinking while James was sharing, thank you for your share, James, because the last time I did a share at this meeting, I did the short share, and I was about 18 months clean. It was about 6 years ago, and I was terrified. And I thought that those four rows of people was about 18 rows of people. And my hands were sweating, and I felt sick, and it was just awful. It was just terrifying. And I was very self-conscious. I was really worried about what everyone thought of me. I probably dressed up for it, you know. And then they forgot to record me as well, which I took as a personal insult. Even though I thought the share had been rubbish anyway, and that everyone that went out for dinner afterwards would be talking about me, and thank God I'm not that important. And it's kind of okay tonight. I've kind of got a realistic view of this is just a share. It doesn't really matter what any of you think about me, apart from my mate who's there. Quite like her to think, you know, my sponsor who's here, you know, but apart from them, it doesn't really matter. It's just a share. So it's all right, there's growth, there's progress, you know, it's a realistic view of my own importance. And I think that's kind of the biggest gift that NA has given me, is the ability to grow and the ability to change. And the gift of liking myself, of being able to respond and not react to situations. That's kind of it for me. It's bottom line is I like myself. I'm not horrible to anyone most of the time. And I'm usually able to be pretty good to myself and my immediate family as well. And that's what matters. And this week has been very exciting. I feel vaguely sorry for all of you having to listen to me for 40 minutes. There's like this little kind of gleeful part inside of me going, ha ha, they have to listen to me for 40 minutes. And when I was asked to do this share, and people sit and do this show and they go, oh, I was really nervous, but I felt I had to do it. And I was like, no, my greatness has been recognised. I was like, and either people sit here and lie and they feel like that as well, or I really need to look at my ego. It's probably, in fairness, a bit of both. So this week I started a new job. I started on Monday. I've just done a week there. I really, really, really like it, and I'm working in the field I've always wanted to work in. I'm working in social care, and I'm working with some of the most vulnerable people in society and helping to improve their lives and make their lives better. And it's something I've wanted to do for a long, long time, and it's something I haven't been ready to do until now. And it's been massive, and I worked... place that I was at before, I finished last Friday. I'd been there for like 2.5 years, so I'd worked myself up. I was a deputy team leader. I knew where everything was. I knew how to do everything. I knew how to ask people to do stuff. I was very, very, very good at my job, and I really loved, like, there was a bit of a social care side to it, but most of it was educational. And I really didn't like doing the same thing. I thought if I had to sit through a third year of Macbeth and then explaining it to children with special educational needs, I might just gouge my own eyes out. So, I'm not doing that anymore. But you know what, I left there, and everyone was sorry to see me go. Well, they said they were anyway. they might be partying now for all we know. But, you know, they got me presents and they organised lunches and the kids' parents bought me stuff and I did my job really well. I got great reference, I got some great experience, I got some great training and I walked out of that place knowing that I'd done the best job I could do and I was ready to do the next thing, you know. And when I started as a teaching assistant, I think that I wanted a job, basically. I'd been on benefits for a long time, and I wanted something. I was a single parent at the time, and I wanted something that was going to fit in with my daughter's hours. And when I first came into recovery, I didn't even want a job. I just wanted not to feel the way I felt, I think. And I'd been trying not to feel the way I felt for a long time, and it didn't work. And the drugs didn't work. And to be quite honest, they never worked. I'm always super jealous of people that will sit there and say, I had some really good times on drugs. I'm like, did you? Mm. God, I wish I had. You know, it didn't really matter what I used. And I used a lot from quite a young age. And I always felt shame. And I'd felt the shame since I was a child, and I didn't want to feel it, and I used drugs to not feel it, and it still didn't work, but it kind of altered it a little bit. Yeah, even when I was, you know, using uppers and using party drugs while I was at university, I felt awful. I was, you know, everyone else would take a couple of pills and dance all night, and I'd take a couple of pills and just end up in the corner thinking, everyone hates me, you know? I was looking for a rescuer. I was looking for someone to come along and make it all better, and no one did. And my using... People always say progressed, you know? My using declined into... Just, oh, it was awful. And I was in a really bad place. And I was up in London, going all over the shop. I've got like nice little spider graphs in front of me. I can't really look at them too much because my sponsor's written cock all over the page. Because that's the level of maturity I've been working with for 8 years. She's always been my sponsor. She'll always be my sponsor. I love her so much. And yeah, I keep looking down the page. All I can see is that. I'm glad I've shared with you all. Where were we? Shame. Yeah, and I think the drugs I was using got worse and worse. The ways in which I was using got worse and worse. The things I would do to get the drugs got worse and worse. My using always went hand in hand with my relationships. I used whatever my current partner was using, and that way I could tell myself that it was them that had a drug problem, it wasn't me, and I was just there and I was just using it because it was there, never questioning why I was with these people in the first place. And it wasn't fun. And I ended up having a daughter in addiction, and not being able to be a parent, you know, and not being able to be there for her at all. And I was in a using relationship. It was quite violent. Oh, my council flat was a crack house, you know, it was just awful. And my ex-stepsister staged an intervention. She came and got me out and took me to London. And and I got on a script and I started going to NA meetings. And it never occurred to me to get clean because, I don't know, I was scared. And I love a crutch. I've been trying to give up smoking this week. I love a crutch, I do. I've got the nicotine patches, it's still not really enough, do you know what I mean? And it's, and you know, kind of, I went to NA meetings And I sat there in my first NA meeting, looking at the floor. I was too scared to go to the toilet, and I really needed to go to the toilet. I was too scared to go outside for a cigarette, and I really wanted to go outside for a cigarette. And I was too scared to look anyone in the eye. And I sat there, and I can't tell you what I heard, but I heard the readings, and I thought, wow, that sounds familiar. And I came to NA, like James did, really, just to get out of the house, do you know what I mean? To get away from my daughter, because I still didn't know what to do with her, because, God, you know, I just didn't know how to live, and I didn't know what to do next, and I wasn't using as such, you know. I was using in NA terms, but, you know, I wasn't using on top of my script, and I was going to victim support counselling, and I was trying to get my benefits sorted out, and trying to get a council flat, and all those kind of things, you know. I'd spend my evenings ironing my two-year-old daughter's clothes because I thought that would make up for being such a terrible parent in her early life. And I would buy her every Disney DVD, and it had to be the ones with two discs in it, because then I would be a better, you know, just insane stuff, really. And I thought, here am I doing really well, getting my own flat, not using on top of my script, going to NA meetings, I am winning at life. And God, I was a mess. And I went to NA for about a year on a script and looked at all these people progressing, getting their key rings, and like people took my number and they tried to phone me, and I think, what are you phoning me for? And yet I also wanted them to give me loads of attention. I didn't know what to do. It was a really, looking back on it, a really confusing time. And I kind of thought, and here is another display of my immense ego, which I'm kind of all right with now. I enjoy it. Keep it in check. I laugh at it. It's okay. Mm. Gay defects. I like them. I don't want to get rid of them. I thought that NA wouldn't work for me. I thought I was too damaged. I thought it was okay for everyone else, but it was never going to work for me. And I also had this really huge fear of rejection as well. And what if I tried to join this club and they didn't want me? And what if I did this stuff and it didn't work? Because I'd been so unhappy for so long that I didn't have any faith. You know, I didn't. And during that first year, a woman came and shared at the meeting I went to. And she'd been about my age when she got clean, and her daughter had been about my daughter's age when she got clean. And she used the same drugs as me. That was important at the time. She could have been me. And I went up to her afterwards and we had a chat, and she took my number, and I believe she tried to call me a couple of times, and I ran away from the phone, you know. And a year later, when I decided to get clean, because my addictions nurse told me I couldn't, which is always the best way for me to get me to do anything, you know, is to tell me I can't. And I was on weekly pickup by then, and I went home. I threw half my methadone down the toilet, and then I did a detox that I'd got off the internet. Took about a week. It was a week to detox, and then 3 weeks of feeling like shite. And I did it with a three-year-old in the house as well. And I kind of say that, like, not to say a bit, probably, to say, look at how great I am. But also to say that, you know, I've got clean in the rooms, and that it is possible, and that people can, you know, and with all the cuts going on, and with all the kind of, you know, it's not possible for everyone to go to rehab. I was insanely jealous of people that went to rehab. I thought it was like, they probably have spas, do you know what I mean? People probably make their meals for them and look after them and, you know, take care of. I wanted to be taken care of. And I was detoxing, and I was in a lot of pain. I felt really ill. And instead of being taken care of, I had to take care of somebody. It didn't sit well with me at all. I didn't like it. And I did it. And I've not used since. And I have no idea how long I've been talking for.
You got 20 minutes.
Really? I've been talking for that long. This has been good, hasn't it?
No, you've got 20 minutes.
Well, which means I've been showing for 20 as well. That's pretty good. All right. I've lost myself now. Yeah, so I got clean. It was all right. And it was horrible. I've just told you that. It was vile. And I didn't have a smartphone. I had a Nokia and an A to Z. And my daughter was in nursery by that time. And I'd put my A to Z in my bag and I would go to meetings. And I would, in the early detox, I'd just be sick in the corner. And people were really nice. They just put waste paper bins there and packed my pack. And I'd just go to meetings and I would share and feel really sorry for myself. And everyone was really nice to me, especially when I started detoxing, you know. When I was there and I wasn't showing any impetus to get clean, people were welcoming. But when I started detoxing, everyone in that room was on my side. And I felt supported. And I felt awful. And I would go to meetings and I'd get there an hour early. And as soon as someone else showed up, the physical manifestation of my detox, it would be lifted. And it would last until the meeting had finished and the last person had gone home. And I thought, well, there's something here, isn't there, you know? And I kept going back. And I did a day program. I hated everyone in it. It was better than all of them. It really was. I thought I was, you know, and I, you know, I thought, you know, they shouldn't share that, they should share this. I was insufferable. Looking back on it, and it was recommended to me. I did it. Oh, yes, so the woman I heard share, who tried to call me a couple of times while I was walking around with my A to Z in my bag, I went to a meeting I hadn't been to before, and I sat there, came in a bit late, sat there, and I saw this woman. I thought, oh, she looks familiar. And then she said her name, and I remembered, oh, it's that woman that shared 6 months ago. I remember her. And she remembered me, and she took me out for a coffee after the meeting, offered to buy me something to eat, which I refused, because I couldn't eat in front of anyone, and I was just... And I had no money and no food, but I was way too proud to take anything off anyone in early recovery. And she bought me a coffee, which I couldn't drink, because I was so nervous about being out with people. It was terrifying. And I took her number, I took her email, and I went through some interesting early recovery stuff. And I started, you know, to email her these long diatribes, do you know what I mean, of everything that was wrong with my friends, with, you know, the people that should be rescuing me that weren't, do you know what I mean, with, you know, whoever I was sleeping with at the time. My first year was a lot of people, you know. Wasn't a good idea. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. I had a friend, I saw Pava, bless her, and we're now, anyway, we used to sit there and, you know, after our first year, count how many people in the meeting that we'd slept with and laugh at it. I'm so glad I had people to do that with, you know. Not to sleep with, but to laugh at, you know. That. The other stuff was never a good idea. And, you know, the woman who I was emailing, I asked to sponsor me. She said, yes, I will. And she said, oh, I recommend you do this day program. And I said, oh, it's going to be crap. And she said, do it anyway. And I did. And it gave me somewhere to go. And it gave me a lot of insight. And I did my step 1, 2, and 3 in the day program, which is now sadly closed due to bastard government cuts. And I think while I was there, we had 25 people, a peer group that kind of came and went, and two of us are clean today out of those people. And it's luck, and it's work, and it's realising that for the first 2 years, my bum had to be on one of those chairs and I had to open my mouth and I had to talk about what was going on for me. And it was mental, what was going on for me. And as long as I kept doing that, and I kept talking to my sponsor and I kept talking to my friends, no matter how badly I was acting out, and I was acting out badly, I was okay. And I had to do that stuff, I think. can't do it any differently now. I can't kind of, you know, get a time machine and go back and not be that person. I said to my sponsor when she agreed to sponsor, I'm not sleeping with someone for the first year. And she's like, rock on with yourself. Do you know what I mean? Do what you need to do. She's here tonight. I think I had to do it. And I was looking, as I said before, for someone to rescue me. I wanted someone to make it all okay. And around 18 months into my recovery, I got phenomenally depressed and I started self-harming again and I started like having suicidal ideation and I had a nervous breakdown, which they don't call a nervous breakdown anymore. It's now a major depressive episode. I had one of those. Wasn't great. That's why they call 18 months the grey area. There's a reason why that hearing is grey. I was very paranoid. I was going to bed at night and I was double, triple, quadruple checking the door was locked and then I was looking in the wash basket to see if anyone was hiding in there who wanted to kill me. And I can kind of see the funny side of it now because no one would fit in the washing basket. It's quite small. It wasn't fun. I thought about not only ending my life, it was bad, you know. And I thought I was sleeping like 16 hours a day. I couldn't move. You know, my daughter would come home from, that's all I did, walk to school and back. And then I thought that I could hear what the other parents were thinking about me. I thought I could hear it in my head. And I had shame. And that's what it was. It was my shame manifesting, do you know what I mean? That I'd carried around for me so many years and that I hadn't processed. And I went on some antidepressants. And I went on some more antidepressants. And then finally the therapy I've been waiting for came up and I worked through a lot of stuff with a therapist for like 3 years. And that, along with the steps and along with these rooms, enabled me to get that growth that I was talking about when I first started talking. And it took me to a really dark place and then I came out the other side and I still get like these little shame attacks, do you know what I mean? My mind will throw up, I'll remember when you did this. And I'll go, yeah, it's all right really. But years ago, that's all I could think about is all the terrible things that I'd done, all the terrible things I've done to me. And God, it gets boring, really. And depressing, funnily enough. And I think I was going somewhere important with this. Working through that stuff and coming out the other side of it and being able to accept myself and to accept other people. I mean, it's funny, isn't it, that my first few years in recovery, I was completely self-obsessed. I've remembered where I was going now, that's good. I was completely self-obsessed and looking for someone to rescue me. I did. Taking responsibility was what my therapist forced me to do, and I didn't want to be responsible for myself. Let me tell you, about 2 years in, I did it. And it was more painful than getting clean. Realising that no one was coming to rescue me, you know, and the people I had lined up to come and rescue me were really fucking bad choices anyway. I'm not meant to swear, am I? They were terrible choices. I was just repeating. It was insanity. It was using, do you know what I mean? It was, you know, doing the same behaviour and expecting different results. And, you know what? Bless my sponsor for allowing me to make those mistakes and coming to that realisation by myself. You know, bless her for not saying, oh, you should do this and you shouldn't do this. Bless her for just being there for me when I just turned around and said, I've had enough now. I need to stop doing this and I don't know how. And I'm recommending a way that I addressed it, you know, somewhere else with someone, you know, with someone else. And I took a year out of NA to do that. And it was a massive gift to be able to take responsibility for my life, to be able to say, I'm going to have to get a job. I'm going to have to pay my bills, I'm going to have to care for my daughter, and I'm going to have to care for myself, because no one else out there is going to do it for me. And you know what, a little while after I started doing that, things got really so much better. You know, I started being, stopped so much being worried about what other people thought of me, and I really stopped being worried about what other people were doing, and realised that someone else's recovery was none of my business anyway, and they could rock on with themselves, and I could rock on with myself, and everyone would be happy. It's great. Recommend that, you know. I was sitting here, like, you know, listening to James share, and saying, thinking to myself, you know, how perfect this program is for the individual, and how it allows us to grow into ourselves and to be who we are, you know. I don't have a higher power. I don't even like the term higher power. I don't pray, do you know what I mean? I don't believe in defects. And I'm allowed to work my program around that. And the freedom I have today is incomparable. When I first sat in an NA meeting, there was no way I was going to be able to get clean. And then I was clean. And there was no way I was ever going to be able to take responsibility for my life. And then I took responsibility for my life, and there was no way that I was going to be able to ever be employed. And then I was employed, and there was no way I was ever going to meet someone. And then I met someone, and there was no way I was going to work. It's a work in progress. They put up with a lot. But they're committed to making it work. I find that commitment terrifying. I have to do it a day at a time. Because if I think about spending the rest of my life with this one person, I just want to run away. And, but they are committed to me, and that allows me freedom, actually. I thought it was the opposite of freedom, but that's what it's allowed me. Now, I've had a child in recovery. He's going to be 3 in February. It's the greatest gift to have a child in recovery. I had to go back into therapy because the relationship I have with him wasn't the same as the relationship I had with my daughter, because I used for the first 2 years of her life. That was hard. And I had to do a lot of work. And you know what? The answer was there all along. It's not her, it's me. It's always me. Do you know? And if I look at myself and I'm willing to change, I'm willing to alter some of my damaging behaviours, then it will get better. And now, you know, I started talking about my week at the beginning. Got my new job. I really like it. They're paying me quite a decent amount of money as well. It's really exciting. And I've seen my friends this week. I have some super, super, super women going out with one of my absolute favourite people after this meeting to eat vegetarian food and talk about feminism. I'm really looking forward to it. I've looked after my children this week, been there for them, I've made sure the childcare's in place, you know. Bought my daughter a phone, which she now has to be surgically separated from over 5 years. But she's walking to school and on that on her own. I'm able to give her that freedom without catastrophizing about something's gonna happen to her. I couldn't do it before. I couldn't. She was out of my sight. I knew she was going to be murdered because that's what I deserved. It's funny, isn't it? But it is funny. But at the same time, it's not if it's happening in your head. And I couldn't. And even now, if something's not right, that's where my fit. Like, children, it's God. It's such a fear-based love. Yeah, that's where my thoughts go. Something terrible is going to happen to my children because I deserve that. And then I think, oh, God, hang on a minute. Better check in with someone. Or share it. Good idea. So my mum's been down this week. Cute eye-rolling from anyone who's ever heard me share about my mother. She came down for 10 days. And you know what? I accept her now. And when she throws me some shit, I don't have to catch it. I can stand to one side and watch it land on the floor and go, oh, that's not mine. She's an incredibly difficult human being. She's not happy. and I don't think she knows who she really is, and I don't blame her anymore, because that's what it was, do you know what I mean? I blamed everyone else for my life. It was everyone else's fault. It was everyone else's fault I was an addict. It was everyone else, everything was everything else's fault, and I don't blame her anymore. I also don't forgive her, you know, and I'm going to be 8 years clean next year, with a bit of luck, and she's the only person who I haven't made an amends to, and I'm not in any hurry to do so. I'm not ready, you know. I don't feel it's right, you know. I think it's all right to move on. It's all right to accept her for who she is. I don't know, I think forgiveness might be going a step too far. But she came up. I allow her to see her grandchildren. I allow her in my house. I set very clear boundaries. I stick to those boundaries. And she crosses them. And then I remind her of the boundaries. And it's all right. It's okay. And I can have the relationships I want on my terms. And I can give people the relationships they need. I can make those be on my terms as well. Let's just have a quick look at my notebook. Check I've talked about everything I wanted to. Yeah, okay, so self-will. I was talking to someone about self-will the other day. They were doing a step three, and I was talking to them, and they said, well, what is it? You know, what would you define it as? And I said, well, my daughter's father was in recovery, and he relapsed recently. And she was brokenhearted, and she was having nightmares. She was waking up screaming. She was upset. She was angry. And I wanted to dismember him, actually, by hand, and tear his limbs off. I was that angry because of what he'd done to her, and that he expected sympathy from me as well. And I was like, do you know what? There's loads of people out there who'll give you sympathy. I'm not going to be that person. And I wanted to, apart from dismember him, which was pretty unrealistic. You know, I've never dismembered anyone. I wouldn't know how to go about it. It's bigger than me. But I wanted to Facebook message him, tell him he'd never see his daughter again, call him all kinds of, see you next Tuesdays. And I wanted to phone his mum up and tell her what he'd done. And I wanted to do all this stuff, and I didn't do it. And that's what self-will is, you know, and that's instant gratification that's going to make me feel better for 0.02 seconds, and then it's just going to cause a lot of harm. I don't do it anymore, and I can respond to situations. I don't have to react to them. It's, you know, he's still not my favourite person, you know. Probably wouldn't piss on him if he was on fire or anything, you know. I'm not willing to go that far, but have some sympathy is the wrong word. I have some pity, and I can not damage him or myself with my anger. And that's what I explained to that person, what my definition of self-will was. And thank you. And that not acting on it and seeking help where appropriate, ringing my sponsor, going to a meeting and sharing, talking to my friends, caring for others, doing service. That's where that stuff is alleviated. Yeah, self-will was the last thing on my list, apart from cock, which I don't think we'll get. Sorry, mate. Yeah. I take my hat off to James for doing his steps. I'm doing my step 12 at the moment, and it's just, I'm just not doing my step 12, it's sitting there. I keep getting kind of new deadlines for it and going, oh, I'm so busy, you know. And it's taken me a long time to get through the steps. It's taken me a long time to find some freedom from myself and from the limits that I put onto myself, and to have some agreeable mental health, and to not want to use, that's ages, and to find some freedom. It took a long time, and God, I'm about to come out with something really cheesy. Forgive me. It's on record as well. And one of those really annoying NA sayings is don't leave till the miracle happens. And the miracle took a long time to happen for me. But it did happen. So stick with it. Leave it there.
Thank you.